particular order. It was tradition, though, that the head of the candidate's family would be permitted to ask the final question. Each member was free to ask anything they wished, but was limited to a single inquiry unless lied to.
"What is your name?" Darius Heartless asked.
"Nunca Poison Dagger,"
he answered with obvious relief.
"Where did you travel to?"
Xylas Soulbreaker added.
"I went to the Barrens in northern Rutenia, near the Kirtis Pass."
"Did you kill anyone?"
Baldwin Blooddrinker asked.
"I killed 3 shepherds who crossed my path."
The idiot actually sounded proud of that, as if killing poorly armed shepherd boys were any sort of accomplishment for a dark mage.
"Did you take any spoils?" Gareth Wormwood asked.
"Yes, there were no coins, but I took 5 iron daggers from my victims along with a coat I lacked."
Typical poison dagger, Lilith thought. They just want to survive the damn quest. They don't care at all about coming back with a reputation.
"What is your favorite color?"
Tiberius Blackwater asked with a straight face. Nunca blinked before answering.
"Black."
That was 5. Lilith smiled affectionately at the young man.
"Do you like staring at my chest?"
"What?"
Nunca said, startled.
"No, of—"
His denial was cut off by a sudden shout of pain. The runes and symbols throbbed an angry red and sparked, sending energy into the fool's body. He instinctively tried to get out, but ran into an unseen barrier at the circle's edge. Seeing the look of startlement on his face as he bounced off brought a few unexpected chortles from around the table. The punishment only lasted a few seconds, then the aura changed back to a tranquil bluish-white. "Obviously you were not paying attention when your granddaddy explained to you what would happen if you lied," Lilith informed him, trying to be helpful. "What you just suffered was the minimum punishment the circle will inflict. If you tell another lie, the pain will grow worse, and it will continue to increase with each additional lie. Tell enough lies, and it can even be fatal." Nunca looked down fearfully. He then bowed his head.
"I apologize. Please forgive me."
Lilith just sat there and smiled. As she did so, the sweat on his forehead began to shine. "Well, since you did not answer me truthfully, I am permitted to ask you another question. Tell me, has your grandfather ever said he would like me dead?" A look of terror covered the boy's face.
"No!"
The light bathing him shifted to red, and there was a crackling as magical energy coursed painfully through his body. It lasted noticeably longer, perhaps for 15 seconds or so. When it ended, he was bent over and his legs were shaking. They could all hear him gasping for breath. Lilith waited patiently to allow him to recover. "Would it make you happy to see your grandfather with his throat slit?" His gaze jerked from her to Dante, his fear obvious.
"No, I would—"
Once more, his words were swallowed by howls of pain. His body twisted and spasmed. His arms and head jerked about like a string puppet in a child's hands. It drew laughter from all around the table, from everyone save Dante.
"He doesn't learn very quickly, does he?" Tiberius quipped.
"Well, he is a poison dagger, you know," Gareth said.
The light remained red for perhaps 30 seconds. This time, when it stopped, poor Nunca dropped to his hands and feet. Tears were leaking from his eyes, and there was a stream of drool from a corner of his mouth. The way he was trembling, Lilith half expected him to start begging. Lilith turned her attention over to Dante. His expression was utterly blank.
"Is this really the grandson you were bragging to all of us about?" Lilith asked him. "The one you said was brilliant?"
He said the same about all his children and grandchildren. Dante refused to acknowledge that anyone with a drop of his blood could be anything less than exceptional.
"Brilliant?" Tiberius turned to Dante. "Did you actually say that?"
Dante answered as if each word were being dragged out of him.
"I may have been mistaken."
"Obviously," Tiberius said with a chuckle.
Dante turned those cold eyes toward him. She wondered if a brand new feud had just been started between Poison Dagger and Blackwater. Dante then shifted his gaze towards her. She just smiled back. It gave Lilith the deepest satisfaction to know just how much this had to be hurting him. Revenge really was sweet. The fact this would only worsen the problems between their 2 houses did not bother her at all. She didn't want to make peace with him. She only wanted to injure him as much as she could, before one of his children finally got up the nerve to stick a knife into his back. She had to wait about 5 minutes for Nunca to finally climb back to his feet.
"So," Do you think your grandfather is a vain, greedy, small-minded, petty, vindictive ass that the family would be better off without? The poor boy turned a frightened face to his grandfather and opened his mouth.
Just answer the question truthfully, you fool! Dante snapped.
Nunca shut his mouth and nodded obediently.
Yes.
The light surrounding him remained tranquil.
Amazing. Who would have thought a poison dagger could actually learn something?
That produced a fresh series of laughs. Dante sat rigid in his chair, eyes locked on his grandson. When the laughter finally died down, he asked the final question.
Do you know you are a disgrace?
The young man lowered his head.
Yes, grandfather.
The aura remained unaffected.
It's over, Dante said, voice hollow.
Nunca flinched. The council members all quickly agreed that Nunca Poison Dagger had indeed successfully completed his first quest, and was now a Dark Mage of Alteroth. The newly recognized Dark Mage was given leave to go, and did not waste a second. Shortly after that, the meeting was adjourned. Dante was the first to exit, storming out without a word. Lilith was in a fine mood, humming and singing all the way home. It had been years since she'd enjoyed a council meeting half so much. When a couple days later it was announced that Nunca Poison Dagger had suffered a fatal accident, Lilith was anything but surprised. The news made her a bit sad. After all, getting rid of such an obvious incompetent would make Poison Dagger stronger. Chapter 26 A Favor.
I take it the meeting went well, mistress?
Hollister inquired in a respectful voice. It was surprisingly entertaining. Her steward did not ask for details.
I wish to remind you that Andris will be attending dinner tonight.
I haven't forgotten. Is Walter still sulking?
He is somewhere in the North Tower. He killed one of the slaves and is likely eating her.
So long as it was one of the general's slaves and not one of the staff, it's fine. He should be out of the way at least. Many of the slaves in Castle Corpselover had no specific task, and were essentially here to be eaten or killed off. Walter, Enver, and certain others were free to do with them as they liked. Other slaves, like her steward or her cook or her maids, were off-limits. It kept her from having to replace important servants and also kept the slaves divided. The ones who knew they were safe were not inclined to help the others. I want Andrus to enjoy his visit. Hollister bowed low to her.
It shall be done, mistress.
No one in Alter ever saw the sun rise or set. When the day ended, twilight simply bled away until there was only blackness. There was no moonlight or stars, no streetlights, and most windows were shuttered tight and gave off no flicker. The only illumination came from the forge. Lilith sat by one of the open windows high up in the south tower. She looked out into the blackness and felt at peace. She was a creature of darkness as much as her father or Enver. For a moment, she wondered about Waldo. He was not like her. No matter how hard he tried, he would never belong to the darkness. She had known that for a very long time. It had surprised her that rather than make her despise him, it had only made her love him that much more. He was truly his father's son. Lilith had loved all her children, but Waldo had always been especially dear to her. Was it because she looked at him as she saw his father? Or was it the natural affection a mother felt for the child who was different from all the others? She couldn't tell the reason. She only knew that she would do anything to assure his survival. When Walter had died, Lilith had realized that Waldo would need a great deal of help if he were to survive as the next head of Corpselover. If any of her other children had lived, she would have found a nice, quiet place for him where he could be the head of his own branch family. He would visit for the festivals and weddings, but otherwise be forgotten. When he became her last child, things became much more complicated. She could not have set him aside in favor of someone else, even if she'd wanted to. Any relative she elevated to replace him would have had Waldo killed the moment she died. Waldo would have a stronger claim to be the head of the family than anyone else. He had to become head, or else perish. If he were going to rule Corpselover and sit on the council, he would need a great deal of help. That was why Lilith had come up with her plan. The council's action in sending him on his fool's quest had forced her to begin things years sooner than she'd wanted. There was no helping it. She would begin to put things in motion. Plots within plots, wheels within wheels. I'll tear all of it down if I have to. My son will rule after me, no matter the cost. Out in the darkness, she saw a light approaching from down below. It was bright enough to reveal several forms shuffling through the empty streets. It had to be Andrus and his escort.
"Is someone coming to dinner?"
a playful voice spoke. Lilith continued to look out the window without bothering to turn around. "You do know it's pointless to sneak up on me when I always know where you are."
"Forgive me. You know how I am."
"Yes. Be grateful you are so useful, or I would be rid of you."
"Such cruel words for your most devoted servant."
Lilith laughed softly. Devoted. Except for kind or maybe merciful, she couldn't think of a word that described him less. She didn't hear his approach, but could sense it through their bond.
"The servants tell me someone is expected for dinner, but they don't know who. Found a new lover, have we?"
"I'm a little too busy for lovers at the moment." Enver stood just a few feet behind her. Their bond had grown very sensitive over the years, and they could both pick up on the other's emotions easily.
"I can feel that little spark of excitement you have whenever you start a plot. What is it you are scheming?"
"You don't actually expect me to tell you, do you?"
"Of course not, but one can always hope."
"Never mind who is coming. I expect you'll get the information from the staff soon enough. I'll have a task for you soon." Enver did not look pleased.
"Is this going to be one of those pointless errands you like to annoy me with?"
She shook her head. "What I have in mind will be important."
"Like the treasure map I provided your son?"
Lilith nodded. Enver gave her a bloodless smile.
"Will I at least get to kill someone? Slaughtering helpless slaves gets boring after a time."
"Oh yes," she promised.
"Well, that is pleasing to hear. But it hurts that you won't share your plans with me."
"I will tell you your part. That is all you need to know."
"Walter has been very upset with you lately. His mood has been black as night."
"I know."
"He killed one of the sex slaves, pretty little thing. Name of Dina, or Delia, I think. He beat her to death. Probably taking out his frustration. Probably imagining it was a certain other woman."
"If he is unhappy, it is because he wants more than he can have."
"Well, don't we all?"
Enver leaned a bit closer to her.
"Why don't you end him? There is no happiness for him, you know. His entire existence is pathetic. Why don't you put him out of his misery? Or were you hoping Walter would do it? What's your plan? Did you bring Walter back just to teach your youngest how to hate? How to kill? It would have worked if Walter had any sort of spine. Too bad your last child is such a coward."
No one else would ever talk to her like this. Enver loved to mock her and point out her failings. "Kneel." His legs trembled as he tried to resist. They soon bent. He kneeled before her on the stone floor. "Beg my forgiveness and ask me to punish you for your rude tongue." His lips twisted, and she could feel his resentment through their bond. He clasped his hands together and bent his proud neck.
"I beg your forgiveness, mistress. I beg you to punish me for my insensitive remarks."
Lilith knew he didn't mean a word of it. "Remain exactly as you are for the rest of the night, and thank me for my compassion." He clenched his teeth before speaking clearly.
"I thank you for your consideration, mistress."
She walked past, leaving him to remain there on his knees until the dawn. Andra's corpse lover was dressed in black robes and was being guided by the castle steward. Within his heart, a tiny portion of fear mixed with excitement and expectation. He was the head of one of the many, many branch families of corpse lover. His family lived on a small estate about 20 miles from Alter. They would visit for the solstices, and if there was a wedding in the main family. Lilith would spare him a few moments for some idle chatter and a polite question or two, before moving on to the next family and doing the same. Nothing in any of the get-togethers had ever suggested she held him in any sort of special esteem, so when he'd received this invitation, he'd been taken by surprise.
"Did my cousin say why she wanted me to come here?"
"The mistress did not share her reasons, nor did I inquire,"
Hollister replied stiffly. Andrus nodded and continued to follow in silence. Any unexpected summons by the main family was always cause for some trepidation. It was not unheard of for visiting family members to simply disappear. Usually, though, that only happened in response to some sort of significant blunder. Since he'd not committed any, he felt reasonably sure he would survive this. Andrus suspected the reason he'd been called to dinner. His suspicions filled him with eagerness. The branch families held a unique status within Alteroth. Being members of the ruling houses, they were all citizens. Most of them could practice magic, and they were not required to go on first quests, They had the freedom to travel, and could go to foreign countries without asking for permission. They had the freedom to marry whoever they chose, and to choose their own profession, and make their own money. They were permitted to be married to only one spouse at a time, though. Only members of the main family were entitled to multiple wives. Many of them were merchants or overseers or officers within each family's military. Some traveled far and wide offering their magical services to the highest bidder. Each branch family was provided their own home, normally outside of Alter. They also had the right to demand a meeting with the head of the main family, a right seldom used. Compared to most of the people, they were very well off. However, they had no political power and remained at the mercy of the main family. They could earn money and have personal property and livestock, but they could not own land. Their homes were gifts from the main family and could be taken from them on a whim. If the family's troops were assembled, they were expected to serve and fight. They were citizens, but unless they left Alteroth permanently, they remained pawns of the main family and could be killed at a single word. "The family gives and the family takes," was a saying Andrus knew well. When he was at last brought to the dining hall, Lilith was there waiting for him. Rather than the usual black robes, she was dressed in a simple red dress that covered her from neck to ankles. There were settings at the head of the table and to the immediate left. She was making a special effort to honor him. "Cousin, it is good to see you again," Lilith greeted. "I've missed your company." That was a lie, but it was a welcomed lie. Andrus bent his head slightly as a sign of respect. Dark mages rarely bowed, even to each other. "It also pleases me to be in your company again, cousin." Lilith motioned to the table and nodded graciously. "Let us catch up over dinner." As soon as they were both seated, the servants appeared with the appetizer, freshly baked bread with honey and butter. For the main course, there were a variety of dishes placed before them. Succulent roast pig, baked chicken, slices of beef, baked potatoes, stewed vegetable, and loaves of white bread. For dessert, there were cakes and pies and sweet puddings. To wash it all down was strong red wine. It was a sumptuous meal that would do any kitchen proud. As they ate, Andrus was careful not to do more than sip at his cup. He wanted to keep all of his wits about him. They talked of family, and of magic, and of things unimportant and harmless. She asked him about his travels as one of her merchants. He shared a few stories and won some amused smiles and even got a few laughs from her. It was all meaningless. She wanted something, and was simply trying to soften him a bit. He was flattered to have the head of the family go to so much trouble. Darius Heartless, for example, was known to simply give his extended family orders when he wanted something from them. Lilith had the good graces to at least frame her wishes in the form of requests. When the meal ended, and they had both had their fill, the servants took away all the dishes and plates, leaving them only their goblets and the wine. Andrus observed all the servants withdraw from the dining hall to leave them alone. Lilith leaned back casually in her seat and balanced her goblet at the end of her fingers, carefully swirling the wine about. "Cousin, I need a favor."
"Here it comes," Andrus thought, the moment he'd been waiting for since receiving her invitation.
"How can I be of service to you?" She looked at him over the lip of her goblet. "By now I am sure you have heard about my son being off on an unusual first quest." The dictates of the council were supposed to remain secret, but they never were, not for trivial matters like this. Andrus cautiously nodded, her words stoking his hopes.
"I have.
As you know, Waldo is my last surviving child. The council's actions have made the situation more difficult than it needs to be, and I'm forced to take certain precautions."
"I understand."
He was very careful not to let his eagerness show.
Lilith knew that her son was doomed. Ever since the news of his first quest and its impossible requirements had gotten out, every one of the branch families had started to guess whom she might choose to be her new heir. Rumors had been flying that this candidate, or that one, was about to be selected.
"If you would agree to send me one of your children, I would be deeply grateful to you."
It had actually happened. He let out a breath of relief and allowed himself a wide smile.
"My son, Erebos, would be more than honored to be adopted into your family, and to act as heir should anything occur to dear Waldo."
The edges of Lilith's mouth turned down.
"No."
Andrus was caught off guard.
"I beg pardon, cousin. What do you mean, no?" "I mean, no. I'm not asking to adopt your son as my heir.
Waldo will succeed me, no one else."
"I don't understand. You just told me that you needed my son."
Lilith closed her eyes.
"I know what sort of rumors have been going through the family. I do not doubt that all of you have already buried my son. Well, unbury him." Waldo will survive to return home, don't doubt it. It may take many months, but he will return. So I have no need for a new heir. For 10 generations, this line of the family has held power, and I will not see the line end with me. He is my last child, and he has my blood. I mean to see him rule this family after me, and I will do whatever it takes to ensure that. That certainly made things clearer. He felt the sudden need to take a long swallow of wine. His dream of becoming part of the main family had been realized, and then crushed within the same conversation. He took the bottle and began refilling his cup. "Then why do you need my son?" Lilith sighed. "I don't."
"What?"
"I want your daughter," Lilith said, spelling it out for him. "The child I was referring to was your daughter, not your son."
"You want to adopt Hera?"
"You really do jump to conclusions, don't you? I never mentioned adoption." Andrus looked at her dumbfounded. His daughter was 16, and already very talented in the dark arts. However, she had certain issues. He had planned to give her a few more years to mature, before taking her under his wing and teaching her about being a traitor.
"I don't understand. What do you want with Hera?"
Lilith stared into her wine. "The council sees my son as a fool. That will not change no matter what he does on his quest. Once I am gone, they will simply try to use him or arrange an accident for him." She looked up from her wine, and her dark eyes stared into his. Andrus shifted uncomfortably in his seat. The intensity of her gaze was unnerving. "I know what you and the others think of him. No matter what you may believe, Waldo is strong and has great talent. One day, I promise you, all of you will see him as I do. You will see his power and tremble." Andrus could only nod. He didn't dare to so much as make a sound. "Until that day comes, though, he will need someone at his side the council will fear. If they will not respect him, then they must respect someone close to him. That is the only way he will survive long enough." To Andrus's relief, she turned her focus back to her wine. "I will take your daughter on as my apprentice. I will instruct her not only in the deeper magics, but also in the ways of politics, and show her what it really means to rule over others. I will bring out her full potential and make Hera someone to be feared." He was trembling slightly. The hopes that had been raised and just as swiftly dashed were rising again. Members of the council very rarely took on apprentices outside of their own immediate family. When they did, though, it was always a sign they'd found someone of extraordinary ability. His daughter's future was suddenly looking very bright. Andrus was not about to bring up his concerns and risk damaging Lilith's high opinion. Lilith stared into the wine and imagined her son's reaction when she told him. She knew of Hera's faults and doubted she could fix them completely. Lilith didn't expect Waldo to thank her or be very happy about what she was planning. The fact was, this was what he would need to continue once she was gone. If a foul-tasting medicine would save you, then you held your nose and forced it down. "When my son returns, he will need a proper wife to guide him and start giving him children with suitable blood. Someone who can point out the hidden dangers. Someone the council will respect. I think your daughter would make a fine wife for him." She drank the wine, and thought it tasted a little bitter. Chapter 27 The New Apprentice. It was the nose. One couldn't help but focus on it. It wasn't just big. It hooked. It looked like some sort of fleshy beak. When you looked at her face, your eyes were just drawn to it. Poor girl, Lilith thought. For a woman, there were few things worse than to be ugly. Lilith considered the girl's features with a critical eye. She was small, just barely standing 5 feet and very much on the thin side. Even in black robes, it was obvious her chest was as flat as a boy's. The rest of her features were bland. If she had been blessed with a cute little button nose, she would still have been plain. What was more interesting was her posture. She stood straight, with shoulders back and eyes returning Lilith's scrutiny. Her face was not defiant, but there was nothing submissive there either. Despite the situation and how much was at stake for her, she seemed confident and calm. Lilith was quite skilled at reading people, yet she could not be certain whether the girl was as relaxed as she appeared or hiding her natural anxieties. Either way, it was a promising start. "Welcome to Castle Corpse Lover, Hera. I trust your father has explained why you were summoned?"
"Yes, Aunt Lilith. He told me I was to become your apprentice."
The girl bent her neck ever so slightly.
"I am deeply honored, and will work hard to prove myself worthy of your selection."
Technically,
Hera's father was a fifth or sixth cousin to Lilith. It was tradition that within the extended family, older relatives were referred to as uncle or aunt. Younger relatives went by nephew or niece, and those close to the same age were simply cousin. This made things less confusing. "Did your father tell you anything else?"
"He said that you wanted me to marry your son, and that you were very sure he would return from his first quest."
"What do you think about that?" Small Shoulders gave a small shrug. "If that is the price for being apprenticed, I will pay it." Lilith lifted a single eyebrow. "You don't like the idea of being married to Waldo?"
"I like the idea of becoming your daughter. Even more, I like the idea of becoming your apprentice. I don't have any special interest in being married."
"Just with Waldo or with anyone?"
"I have no wish to be married to any man."
"Well, I was never married, but that was because I would have no longer been head of the family. I always had my lovers, though."
"I have no use for men, except for my father. I have never met a single man that I liked."
"Oh," Lilith said after a slight pause. "It's like that, then?"
"It is."
Lilith was not shocked. Hera had a reputation for hostility and rudeness, especially towards men. For a corpse lover, such behavior was fine, when it was directed towards those beneath her. It became a problem when it was aimed at other members of the family, or at members of the other houses. As for her personal preferences, those were unimportant so long as they were limited to the sex slaves. In Alteroth, all pleasures could be indulged without fear. "That is fine, niece. I have some lovely slave girls I keep for just that sort of thing. You are free to indulge your tastes." Lilith saw the girl lick her lips ever so slightly. "However, when the time comes, marrying my son and giving him children will be part of your duty."
"I have already said that I understand, Aunt Lilith, and will do what I have to."
"My son has a very likable personality. You may actually enjoy being his wife."
"I doubt it."
"Well, that's fair. I doubt Waldo will much enjoy being your husband. I am sure once you have some children you will come to love them and be happy with your new family."
"If you say so, Aunt Lilith. What really matters to me is the chance to learn more magic. I want to be a powerful and feared necromancer like you. I want you to teach me everything."
"My, my. So young and filled with ambition. Do you want to know why I chose you?"
"Certainly. It's not because of your talent for necromancy, though that was an important element. It's also not because of your intelligence or your vast potential. Obviously it wasn't because of your looks or your sweet disposition."
Hera did not look either pleased or upset. "I chose you because I needed someone who was ruthless." Hera grinned.
"Thank you."
"Tell me, what happened to your younger brother, Malkor?"
"He had an accident."
Lilith smiled knowingly. "An accident?"
"Yes, Aunt Lilith. He fell down the stairs and died."
"When you just happened to be the only one with him?"
"Accidents happen, my aunt."
"Oh, they certainly do, though usually not until after a child has earned the black robes and can protect himself. Your brother was, what, 6 at the time, and you were 14?
"That's right."
"Did you really think he was so dangerous to you? Were you afraid he might be a threat someday?"
"No, I just didn't like him."
There was not even a hint of guilt.
"Yes," Lilith thought, "I picked the right one.
I think you and I will get along splendidly, my niece."
"I think so too, Aunt Lilith." "There's just one thing I need to make clear to you first, though."
"Yes?"
"My son Waldo will not suffer any accidents."
"Of course not," Hera assured her. "I would never."
Lilith cut her off. "Yes, you would. It's obvious. I am sure you are already calculating how long you would have to wait and what the best method would be. You probably wouldn't dare while I am still around, but I will not live forever. Frankly, my dear niece, you wouldn't be the person I need if you weren't already thinking about it." Hera considered for a moment, and then nodded.
"Do you blame me? You said I will have to endure being married and having some screaming children tear their way out of me. Very well. If that's the price, I will pay it. But why would I suffer it longer than I have to?"
"Because within 1 hour of my son's death, you will know your own." Hera's eyes widened. "Do you know what a death seal is, Hera?" The girl nodded. "Before you marry my son, I will place one on you connecting your life to his. I did not bring you here because I need an apprentice. I brought you so that you could act as my son's advisor, and do the things for him that he cannot do for himself. You will live only for his sake, and all your strength and knowledge will be placed at his service. You will be a proper wife to him, Hera, whether you want to be or not."
"I see. So the price for my apprenticeship and joining the main family is not only my freedom, but eventually my life as well? That seems rather high."
"Oh, it's higher than that still. The sort of power you seek always demands a very heavy cost. If it is more than you are willing to pay, say so. You can return home and learn how to be a merchant or a common mage for hire.
As Lilith was speaking, Hera noticed the fingers on her aunt's left hand were trembling slightly.
The kind of power you are offering is worth any cost.
I thought the same once.
Are you telling me it's not?
What I am telling you is that you are very young. The day may come when you regret some of your choices.
A smug grin blossomed beneath Hera's nose.
I doubt it, Aunt Lilith. So long as I get what I want, I don't care what it costs me.
The words called up a memory. For an instant, Lilith imagined she could taste the salt air, and could feel the warmth of Gawain's arms wrapped around her.
"Are you sure this is what you want?"
he'd said to her so tenderly.
"Yes, I don't care what it costs."
She could still remember how he'd looked at her, with those mournful, honey-colored eyes. She'd understood that it had never been for his own fate, but for hers. He really had loved her, and she had loved him.
"May you always feel that way," Lilith said. "Now come with me, and I will begin your instruction. There is much you need to learn, and time is short."
Hera was striding through the halls as though she owned them.
"The dark powers smile upon me."
She had just had her initial lesson and was filled to bursting with excitement. Hera had only just glimpsed the possibilities, and they were whirling through her head. Teleportation, transfiguration, polymorphication, transference, material evocation, and all the other deeper magics. Lilith knew about all of them. The power to twist the universe and bend it to your will. How marvelous it was. How exciting. With such knowledge, anything was possible. Aunt Lilith was all that Hera had imagined her to be and more. She had met Lilith twice during the summer solstice celebrations. Hera had just been one in a long line of relatives to greet her and exchange a few words. How she had longed for more. But it had not been possible. She'd wanted to confess how she admired her and yearned to be the same. Hera recalled eating the ginger cakes and having a vision of being Lilith, of having the power to make everyone kneel before her, the power to condemn with just a word, and to have the living and the dead obey her. It had been such a vivid dream. She hadn't been able to get it out of her head. Now here she was, apprentice to her beloved Aunt Lilith, about to learn all of her secrets and become like her. In Alteroth, power was what mattered most, and women could have quite a lot of it. Even here, though, they were not quite equal to men. Lilith had never married because her husband would have immediately become head of the family. In an enlightened society like theirs, a husband's penis still trumped all the intelligence and ability a woman possessed. Women could learn magic, have careers, and earn their own money, but having children was still seen as their primary duty. Men came first, and they wanted their women to be beautiful and obedient. In Hera's eyes, Lilith was everything a strong woman should be. She ruled the corpse lover family with absolute authority. The council readily acknowledged her as their strongest member. While she was a stunning beauty, Lilith used her looks to her own advantage. She went through lovers like a fox through a henhouse, and was not above turning a man's passions against him. She had expanded the wealth and influence of an already great house, and was as ruthless in business as she was in politics. Lilith really was everything Hera wanted to be. The only thing that kept this from being a dream come true was the fact she was going to have to marry Waldo. Thinking about that soured her mood, but only slightly. She had seen Waldo at the festivals and been anything but impressed. Whether dressed or undressed, he had looked timid. To look at him, one would certainly never guess he was heir to the richest and most powerful family in Alteroth. Within the extended family, there would always been talk about Waldo. He was the disgrace of the main line. Weak, with abilities that centered around healing and defensive spells. Within his veins was the blood of Avalon, and the color of his eyes proclaimed he was no true dark mage. Growing up, she'd heard whispers questioning why someone like him was allowed to exist. The talk was always kept very quiet, though. No one wanted rumors reaching Lilith. When Walter died, the unthinkable happened, and the talk grew noticeably louder. No one wanted Waldo to be the next head of Corpse Lover. For the only time, there were doubts as to Lilith's leadership. People wondered if she were somehow blind to all her son's glaring faults, or if it were just a simple matter of pride. Again, no one in any of the branch families dared speak their doubts aloud. None of them would risk her wrath. They all feared Waldo becoming family head, but the general consensus was that Lilith would remain in power for many years yet. Waldo was unlikely to ever actually inherit. Even if she refused to arrange an accident, 6 of her children had already died, every one of them a respected magic user. What were the chances of an incompetent surviving? During this time, Hera had been upset. The idea of a fool man one day succeeding the great Lilith and ruining all she had built was infuriating. The sheer injustice of it was sickening. But of course, there'd been nothing she could do. When the news of the council imposing their first quest had come out, there had been a unanimous sigh of relief. The council had stepped in and done what Lilith should have done years before. Everyone assumed Waldo would never return and that Lilith would now select a proper heir. "Instead, we have this," Hera said to herself. "Well, it doesn't matter." No one besides Lilith believed Waldo was coming back. For even a skilled dark mage, the conditions would have been near impossible. What chance did the idiot stand? As brilliant as she was, her aunt clearly had a blind spot where her own children were concerned. Well, it didn't matter. Hera was willing to do anything for this opportunity. For the sake of entering the main family and learning the deeper magics, she would even agree to be permanently chained to an incompetent and unworthy male. Now that she'd had time to think about it, though, she realized the terms were not near as bad as they appeared. Regardless of what Aunt Lilith believed, Waldo was not coming back. Even if Lilith held on to her delusions for years, so what? She would be groomed to be heir. Hera would master the necessary spells and learn everything else she needed to run the Corpse Lover family every bit as well as her aunt had. Sooner or later, Lilith would accept the fact her son was not returning home and name her the heir. Once that happened, she could either wait for her time to come or arrange an accident for her aunt. Either way, Hera was never going to be married or have children. She would rule with unquestioned authority and make her house even mightier than it was now. And when the time came, she would find the best female candidate from among the branch families and adopt her as heir. A wonderful future with unlimited possibilities awaited. Hera was headed towards the slave quarters to pick out a couple young girls to help her celebrate her first night in the castle. As she was going, a figure came around a corner up ahead. It was dressed in faded and tattered black robes with gray skin and jaundiced eyes. One look was enough to confirm the being was undead. Seeing this did not concern Hera. Castle Corpse Lover was filled with undead. Squads of them patrolled the halls and the outer courtyard. As a necromancer, it was no more terrifying than a roach skittering across the floor. She barely even noticed until it deliberately moved to block her path and addressed her.
"Who are you?" it demanded.
Hera came to a halt about 10 feet from the undead. "Oh, a zombie. I thought you were just another walking corpse." Her lack of concern made it scowl.
"I asked you who you were. You have robes, so you must be a mage. What are you doing here?"
"You have independent thought. You can feel anger. That's astounding. Most zombies have limited mental capacity and can't feel emotions. You are a wonderful piece of work. I can't wait for Aunt Lilith to show me how she made you."
"You had better watch that mouth of yours, you ugly scab, or you're going to die," the zombie growled. "Now tell me who you are."
"Ugly scab?" Hera's left hand came up with 3 fingers bent. "Mixataros." The zombie's body suddenly went rigid and could not move. "I take back what I said. A zombie insulting a necromancer is about as stupid can be, and if you think I'm ugly, you need to look in a mirror. Now, shall I rip you apart or burn you?"
"Do you know who I am?"
"You are a defective undead soldier who is about to be unmade. I think I'll just tear you to pieces. Maybe my aunt and I can look you over and figure out what went wrong. It might make a good lesson."
"You can't destroy me. I am Walter Corpse Lover, the family heir."
"Oh yes, I've heard about you. You were the one killed by your grandfather inside the castle, and Aunt Lilith brought you back. I can see she put a great deal of effort into it."
"That's right. I am her son and the family heir. Now release me immediately."
"Despite the obvious quality of her work, you don't have a strong grasp of reality or of logic, do you?" "Well, that's not surprising. Even with someone as skilled as Aunt Lilith, there are limits to what you can do with dead flesh. Still, you are a magnificent zombie. I really hope I am able to make something as good."
"Stop talking to me like I was just a servant. I am the family heir, and if you do not release me right now, I will see that you suffer a slow and painful death."
A similar threat would have left any of the human servants shaking in terror. Hera laughed at it. "You are going to kill me? Really? I never imagined a zombie could tell jokes." She continued laughing.
"Stop mocking me. I am the heir. Do you understand what that means?
She let out a couple more guffaws before speaking again. She had to make an effort to keep from giggling. His anger was just too amusing. You are not the heir. The dead cannot rule the living. Whatever you were in life, all you are now is a zombie. Perhaps you can give orders to the slaves and the other undead, but not to me.
Just who are you?
Hera Corpse Lover, daughter of Andras Corpse Lover and his wife Bianca. I am Lilith Corpse Lover's new apprentice.
You lie. My mother would never take an apprentice. Never!
Yet, here I am.
My mother would have told me if she were planning to bring a new mage into the castle.
Why? Does she need your permission?
Walter glared at her hatefully, and she had to struggle to keep from laughing again.
Well, as fun as this has been, I think I'll be going now.
She slashed her left hand through the air. There was a sound of meat and bone being chopped. His right arm was torn from its socket and landed on the floor with a thud. Black blood dripped down from his open wound.
That's for calling me ugly, Hera said as she walked right past him.
The severed arm was in her way, so she gave it a light kick.
Don't ever do it again, or I will unmake you. The only reason I don't do it now is because there's a chance Aunt Lilith would be unhappy with me.
You will die for this. Mother will never forgive you for attacking me.
The only person I was forbidden to harm was Waldo. Aunt Lilith never even mentioned you. And anyway, you're just a zombie.
Hera left him there, still unable to move, without a second thought. In an empty corridor of her castle, Lilith stood before a mirror with no reflection. She felt a tremor run through her left hand, and it shook just slightly. Lilith grabbed it with her other hand and forced it to stop. It's all right. I still have time. When the tremor passed, she let both hands fall to the side.
Daughter, will you come and talk to me?
Lilith waited patiently as color swirled about and an image slowly took form. Gwendolyn appeared before her, throat cut and leaking fresh blood.
Hello, Mother, she rasped.
Hello, dear. How are you?
Still dead.
Yes, I know. I mean, has anything changed since the last time we talked?
Nothing ever changes on this side. It's very boring. That's why I would like to pass on.
Lilith felt a twinge of guilt at those words. When she had originally bound her daughter's soul to the mirror, she had believed she was doing Gwendolyn a great service. Instead, all she had done was consign her to a different sort of purgatory. Neither alive nor dead. She was a spirit, trapped here between two worlds, unable to enjoy life, but unable to move on to whatever awaited her.
I am sorry, my precious daughter, but I can't let you pass on yet.
I know, Mother. You need my gifts for Waldo's sake. You must make one child suffer for the benefit of the other.
Do you hate me for that?
No. I love my little brother, and I want to save him too. Besides, I am dead. I can wait.
All I wanted was for all my children to be happy.
No. What you wanted was power. We were an afterthought. You only started to care when most of us were gone.
I had too many enemies. Everyone on the council was trying to control me. The branch families were trying to pressure me into taking a husband. They all feared my father and brother, and thought I was nothing back then. I had to fight. I had to get power. I did what I had to.
It was true, but saying so would sound like a pathetic excuse. Is my plan still on its course?
Plans within plans, wheels within wheels. You travel down the road that will bring you to your chosen end.
In other words, yes.
Gwen chuckled.
I see everything that I told you before, but as I have warned you, things can be changed. I see what will be, but also shadows of what still can be. Life is filled with choices and with possibilities. It's so very different from death.
So even with your help, nothing is guaranteed?
It will rain tomorrow. The sun will rise and set without being seen, and lava will flow around the forge. Those things I will guarantee.
Wonderful. Can you tell me anything I can use?
Gwendolyn sang in her gasping voice.
3 wives will he have, one painted with fire, one of gold, and one of night. One who loves him, one who follows him, and one who hates him. Each shall be bound to him, by marriage and by magic.
Lilith's eyes widened. This was new.
I see. Well, I can already guess who is going to love and hate him. But who exactly is this third one?
Gwen smiled playfully.
You will find out.
Lilith knew that Gwendolyn's prophecies always came true.
just as she knew her daughter never revealed everything. I really wish you could just tell me what you know without obscuring it.
You must let me have my fun, Mother. It's very boring where I am.
Well, I thank you for this knowledge. Gwen nodded as her image began to fade away.
For what it's worth, Mother, all your children loved you. Even Walter.
Lilith waited until the mirror was once again empty, then turned and walked away.
Chapter 28 A Matter of Justice. It was a bright and sunny day as Melissa Cornwall strolled into Bitford. The last time she had been here was a couple years ago. She had returned to have another go at trying to recruit Roger. The last couple of years had been spent tramping all over the North. She'd visited several nations, preaching about unity, justice, and peace. Melissa had been received by royal courts and spoken directly to various rulers and noble families. She'd used her magic to carry out requests from lords and wealthy merchants. There had also been charitable acts for the common folk, all done without any sort of reward or payment. People needed to understand that the Order was different from the independent mages, who were out for themselves, or the dark mages, who were simply evil. The white mages served a higher cause. They wanted to restore the shattered lands and bring peace and order to them. To bring back the tranquility the world had known in ancient days under the Amoran Empire. Her order sought to purify the world and rid it of all its corrupt elements. White mages could be counted on to help the weak and to always keep their promises. It was the duty of every single one of them to represent the ideals of Avalon and make all people, high or low, know they could be trusted. It was a heroic crusade against the forces of chaos and darkness. She was proud to be taking part in this valiant struggle. Melissa saw herself as a crusader helping to bring light to those in darkness. It was a war, but not every battle in it demanded bloodshed. Sometimes what was called for was a little kindness and help for those in need. If you could win over the hearts and minds of the people, you could bind them to your cause. Melissa was here to once again try and convince Roger the Hedge Wizard to travel with her to the Misty Isle. Once most independents saw the groves of Soulwoods, the Great Library, and the Hidden Lady, they were overawed and more than willing to join the Order. Even those who refused returned home to spread stories of the wonders of Avalon. Right now the Order had a great deal of interest, not only in Roger, but in Lothos in general. There were hopes Dragaal might soon join the Alliance. If Lothos could be enticed to join as well, it would give them a long common border with Alderaath. They could begin cutting off trade routes and building up depots and bases for the inevitable war. So far as Melissa was concerned, that day could not come soon enough. Every time she visited a royal court and told them about all the advantages of joining the Alliance, she would always hear, "But what would the Dark Mages do to us?" Avalon was far away, while Alderaath was close by. The thought of armies of undead led by black-robed mages could unnerve even kings. Melissa's eyes swept southward, in the direction of the enemy. The Dark Mages sabotaged everything they did. They had undermined the Alliance's growth and opposed all of Avalon's noble ambitions. Alderaath's very existence was intolerable. They had to go and would go. It was only a question of when. It pleased Melissa to know her efforts were one small step toward that glorious end. Walking through Bitford, Melissa noted the less than friendly reception the locals were giving her. People stared and made sure to keep their distance even when that meant crossing to the other side of the street. Children ran away or hid behind their parents. Some of the adults drew circles over their hearts. She waved to the villagers and called out greetings. Her efforts, though, only seemed to make the people more skittish. No one returned her greeting or even approached her. The reaction was not a total surprise. Most people, especially common folk, feared all magic users. To many, a wizard was every bit as terrifying as a troll or a vampire. That was part of why Avalon put so much effort into establishing their reputation with the people. Melissa had run into this sort of suspicion before, and it did not particularly bother her. What was surprising was that these people were used to seeing magic, and had a magic user living among them. She clearly recalled the people being much more receptive and friendly during her last visit.
"I wonder if anything has happened."
When she sensed a fellow magic user nearby, she soon spotted a balding man in brown robes heading up the street in her direction. Melissa smiled and approached him. Running into him in the middle of the village was good luck. It would save her time.
"Hello again, Roger. I bring to you the blessings of unity, justice, and peace."
She offered him a bow, something normally only reserved for those of noble birth.
"Hello?"
He did not return her bow, and made a point to keep his distance from her. She was surprised by his reaction. The last time she had been here, he had insisted on buying her drinks and trying to get as close to her as possible. In the end, he'd shown no interest in visiting Avalon or converting to her path, but he'd had plenty of interest in her. She had expected a far warmer welcome from him.
My name is Melissa. I tried to recruit you 2 years ago. We had some very lively debates about magic and how a mage can best serve the people. Perhaps you have forgotten.
I remember you. What do you want?
She continued to smile. Perhaps we could go to the inn and talk a bit over some ale, as we did the last time we met. I have some interesting stories to tell you, and I was thinking I could offer you some assistance if you'd like.
What sort of assistance?
If you'd like, I could add some spells to your spellbook and offer you some magical ingredients.
That was a normal practice when trying to recruit others into the order. You gave without asking for anything in return. It helped to build up trust, and it put the person you were recruiting into your debt. The offer was not always accepted, but she had never seen it spark anger before.
I see. So first you rob me, and then you offer to give me back what you've stolen. Is that the way of it?
Robbed you?
That's right. One of your kind stole everything I had. My spellbook, my wand, all my magical supplies, and all my money, too. He was a wight like you, who came here with this beautiful girl named Alice, he said was his wife. He just used her as a distraction to knock me out from behind and then take everything.
Melissa's spine stiffened.
You must be mistaken. White mages do not steal. I'm sorry if someone stole from you, but it could not have been a member of my order.
He was a magic user, and he wore white robes. So what does that make him?
An imposter,
Melissa answered without missing a beat.
Because white mages are all paragons of virtue? I never believed your sort were as pure as you claimed. When a man talks about how honest he is, you need to keep a hand on your purse.
We do not stoop to criminal acts for personal gain. When we commit crimes, it is always for the cause, she thought.
Does that mean you would, if it were for a greater purpose?
We serve the cause of unity, justice, and peace. When our cause comes into conflict with local laws or with petty officials, we are sometimes forced to take action for the sake of the greater good.
So you admit your kind will break the law, if it's for the good of Avalon?
She frowned at him.
You are twisting my words.
No. I'm calling you out on what you just said. You're fine with breaking the law if it's for a greater good.
What I am referring to is punishing the guilty and protecting the innocent. No member of my order would ever commit theft. Such things are beneath us.
What about forcing someone to join your order? I lose all my money and magical items, and lo and behold, another white shows up offering to help replace what I lost. But at a cost, I'll bet. Like, say, my agreeing to visit Avalon with you.
That is ridiculous. I had no idea you had been robbed, and I certainly was not going to demand anything in return for my assistance. My offer was made out of an honest desire to help a fellow magic user.
How convenient.
Melissa took a deep breath. She had grown a thick skin during her years. He was hardly the first person to be rude to her. What was much harder to swallow were abuses aimed at Avalon, and at the reputation of her order. Roger hawked and spat on the ground in front of her feet as some peasant women might have.
That is what I think of all you damn white mages. You talk about honor and all that, but you'll use dirty tricks to get what you want. Do you think me a fool? You expect me to believe it's coincidence that one of you assaults me and leaves me with nothing just before you show up offering me your help? Some things are too obvious to be denied. You knew I would never agree to leave my home, and so you did this to force me. Well, it won't work. My friends and neighbors will help me get by, and I would rather give up magic altogether than join your kind.
Roger, I give you my word that whoever it was not a white mage. Did this man tell you his name?
He said he was Waldo Rabbit, and the vixen he was with said her name was Alice Rabbit.
Melissa lifted an eyebrow.
He said his last name was Rabbit? Honestly? Come now, that's a false name if I've ever heard one. What did he look like?
Roger crossed his arms over his chest and narrowed his eyes as he answered.
He had white robes, like yours. He had golden hair. Like yours. He had yellow eyes. Like yours. He had pale, white skin. Like yours. He had the look of the Misty Isle. I've met two of your sort before, and he would have fit in perfect with the both of you. He was a white mage, no question.
The description was a problem. Most of the folk in Lothos and the surrounding lands tended to have dark hair and eyes of brown or green. Blondes were exceedingly rare in this part of the world. Yellow eyes were unique to the people of Avalon.
Could he have been using an illusion?
Roger snorted.
I'd have sensed it.
This was becoming more and more troubling. She had assumed this person was an imposter. The physical appearance argued against that. Could he be a deserter? It did happen from time to time. The order made many demands of its members, and some lacked the commitment and strength of will needed. Abandoning your sacred duty was a crime punishable by death. The first thing deserters normally did was throw away their robes and flee as far and as fast as they could. Lothos was pretty far from the isle. Could some deserter have come here thinking he would be safe? Possibly. But why keep your robes in that case? It was like flaunting your crime to the entire world and asking the order to come and hunt you down. Whoever this man was, his actions had hurt the reputation of Avalon and all white mages everywhere. That could not be tolerated. This Waldo Rabbit is no white mage, I promise you. I will find him and punish him, not just for his theft, but for the far greater crime of impersonating a member of my order. I will return with his head and with all that he stole from you. I don't believe a word of it. I don't tell lies.
That's what a liar would say.
The way he glared at her, it was obvious nothing she said would change his mind. So she offered him a bow, said a pleasant farewell, and walked away. She was sure when she came back with this impostor's head in a sack, that would convince him. Chapter 29 A True Knight. This was the time she liked best. Early evening. It was summer, so there was no need for the fireplace. Torches along the wall provided all the light needed. The inn of lost size was filled with customers, almost all of them regulars. Her girls were working. They were either sitting with customers here on the ground floor or else satisfying their desires up in their rooms. Elsa watched as her soiled doves interacted with her patrons. They smiled and laughed and gave the men they were with all of their attention. Her girls rubbed sore shoulders and caressed arms and legs. They made the men who came here feel wanted in a way their wives or girlfriends never could. It was a feeling every man hungered for. It was a game. An illusion, a slow seduction. Except for the youngsters, all her customers knew that none of it was real, but that didn't make their pleasure any less. Here every man could pretend to be handsome and strong and charming. He could talk to a beautiful woman without fear of being rejected or mocked.